is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague Grant Newsham, Colonel United States Marine Corps, former U.S. diplomat, commenting most recently for an Asian-oriented audience about the conversation in the Oval Office in these last hours between the Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese, and the President of the United States, Mr. Trump. The conversation was cordial. It was generous. There were smiles all around in the treaty room, in the White House cabinet table. And there was also a deal made about rare earths, which are not rare. They're worldwide. But for reasons that yet to be explained, the major powers that depend upon rare earths for their electronic businesses, EVs and everything else that I'm watching in front of me right now, all the iPads, all the iPhones, all of the transistors, everything in front of me depends on rare earths. For reasons to be explained, the last decades have allowed all rare earth manufacturing to flow to the People's Republic of China. One mine in Inner Mongolia, in fact, which is a state-run enterprise guarded carefully by state security. Cameras everywhere, I'm told, lots of checking in and out. A population of perhaps 2,200 families, damaging to their long-term health routinely 2 to 3 times the leukemia rate in this mine, emphasizing that rare earths can be mined safely, but not the way the Chinese have been doing it. However, we have in the news the suggestion that China is going to use export controls on their rare earths. This means that 9 months from now, 10 months from now, the production lines will halt in the automobile industry and in the digital universe everywhere, if. Grant, a very good evening to you. The threat from China was enough. We can't explain why it is that China dominates, but they do. In your conversation about Australia with a recent broadcaster to Asia and everywhere, you emphasized that China was playing a card that it may regret. What about the Australia deal? What tells you that it's promising? Because I have large questions about Australia's loyalty. Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Well, the Australia-U.S. rare earth deal is promising because Australia is practically drowning in these things. It has the capability to mine them. And if with little effort, we could actually produce them, process them as well. So it's a huge source and potentially an alternative source to this almost fatal addiction that we've gotten to the Chinese rare earth mining and processing. So potentially it's good if the will is there, the desire on both sides to move fast. And what you could find is that the Chinese have actually, by threatening to play this rare earth card, the chokehold they've got over the Americans in the West, it may actually spur the free nations to produce their own alternative supply chains for rare earths. So the possibility's there, but we need to see the will.
An anecdote, Lyndon Johnson, as a young man in South Texas, and everybody was poor, so being a poor boy did not make you stand out. He had a baseball, and he would take it to the games, pickup games in the neighborhood. He always insisted upon pitching, though he wasn't the best. Why? Because if he didn't pitch, he was going to take the ball and go home. That's immature. You would expect that from boys in South Texas and later presidents of the United States who often showed immaturity. But is that China? Should we regard this as an adolescent, immature adolescent who's being cranky?
To some extent, you might also compare it to a mafia gang that finds it has control of the local gasoline market. But one thing about this, and a little history is interesting here, is in the Civil War, when it started, the Confederacy banned cotton exports mostly. And they thought that U.S. Northern industry and particularly British mill owners who relied on Southern cotton for the textile trade would put so much pressure on Abraham Lincoln that it would help the Confederate States get independent. But what happened is the English said, okay, and they went about and developed a cotton industry in Egypt, which was really became an alternative to southern cotton. So the Chinese may have sort of played this card a little too fast and a little too hard. I'd say it just might have a sort of a response from the free nations that they aren't expecting. Instead of rolling over, we just may say, well, look, we don't want to live with you people. We don't want to do business with you anymore.
There's a fourth plenum underway, drawing up the 15th five-year plan. Also, questions raised about the leadership in the Chinese Communist Party and in the PLA. At the same time, it's important to note that the relationship between Beijing and Canberra is not transparent to me. Is that a factor here? Has Canberra just voted with the U.S. by making this deal, or what is their relationship to Beijing?
I don't think the Australians quite know what their position is. They, by signing this deal with President Trump, that this is seems like a pretty firm commitment to the United States. They allow U.S. forces to operate in Australia. The Australian military operates very closely with the Americans. But on the other hand, this administration in Australia and Australian business interests are very keen to placate the Chinese, to do whatever is necessary to keep business ties going, hoping that somehow the Chinese will go easy on them, and that they can, on one hand, defend against China in league with the United States, and on the other, make a lot of money from the Chinese. This is a neat trick as long as you can pull it off, but I'm not sure they can. But there is a sort of a fundamental underlying softness towards the PRC, towards China, on the part of Australia's ruling class or ruling party, that is troubling. So it's not as if they are 100% on the U.S. side here. They're trying to play a double game in some respects.
China made a lot of people in Australia rich in its go-go years of, we're going to overtake the U.S. Lots of iron ore, lots of aluminum, everything, including that hard coal that Australia has. That's not so much anymore. And China has indicated now and again that the reason it's not so much is that they doubt Australia's affections. Is that a card that Canberra worries about, that, again, China can cut back on its importing?
Oh, very much. I think they're always worried about that. In fact, some Chinese worth listening to have actually referred to Australia as really the gum that gets stuck to the sole of your shoe. And they've referred to the Australian Prime Minister Albanese as the handsome boy, which is a derogatory expression in China. So the Chinese will play that card against Australia that has gotten itself very dependent on exports to China. And they will sometimes ease off and sometimes tighten the pressure, but they're not going to stop. And the Chinese sending that naval flotilla around Australia earlier this year was also a pretty good sign of how Australia looks at things. Excuse me, how the Chinese view Australia. And they see it as a target, and they will apply more and more pressure.
Again, about Beijing. As I recall, Beijing is not interested in alienating Australia, just intimidating it. The appearance of Mr. Albanese in the White House did not seem to be the man who was intimidated. Did I miss something?
Oh, it's something you have to do. And as I said, if you're trying to, say, play this sort of dual approach where you have this good defense relationship with the United States while keeping an economic relationship with China, well, it's important that you get into the White House, that you establish a relationship with President Trump. And one sort of funny thing about all of this is the Australian ambassador who was sitting next to Prime Minister Albanese was Kevin Rudd. And in 2020, he referred to Mr. Trump as the village idiot. He probably shouldn't have said that. And there was it was almost a funny exchange where Mr. Trump pretended he hadn't heard that and asked who said that. And then Rudd sheepishly raised his hand and said, well, it was before I took this position. And Mr. Trump's reply was sort of half joking. He said something like, I'll hate you forever, something like that. And he said it, there was a degree of iciness to it, which if I was Kevin Rudd, I would probably go back to the embassy and have a stiff drink.
The Australians also have a future that is based upon the security offered by the United States. Or do they? Do they count on us the way they used to once upon a time in the 20th century during the first Cold War?
I think it's different. It's a different era. You know, some many decades have passed. And particularly the relationship that they had right after World War II, when everyone knew it was the Americans who kept Australia free or safe during that period, that's sort of died out a bit. And there's sort of an anti-U.S. or sort of skepticism or sanctimony towards the United States that really can't be overlooked. And I'd say it's a certain animosity that is there, it's not everything, but it's part of the equation that, you know, really can't be ignored.
I'm speaking to Grant Newsham, who has wide experience in Oceania. That's what we're talking about. I know it sounds like we're talking about Australia, but this vast area of the Pacific Ocean with sovereign powers that have various relationships with Beijing, with Canberra, with Washington, and there are French colonials in the area. However, when we come back, what about the U.S. and Australia and the future? There's supposed to be a deal that makes us one called AUKUS. Is it still in play? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.